that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, Paisani. Welcome back to another episode of the Italian American Podcast. I'm John Viola, spending the afternoon with two of my best pals, the notorious POB, the Italian American Wikipedia himself, Mr. Patrick O'Boyle, and Ms. Rosella Rago, lately of her third successful cookbook, and a very special guest today on a topic that I think really is going to speak to a lot of our audience, one about family and tradition and really what we're trying to do here, which is the use of modern technology in a lot of ways to make sure that our traditions are something that can be passed on and will be passed on. So it's going to be a really nice afternoon for us. And guys, it's good to be together today and been working hard on the new space.
You want to ruin my life.
Why?
Because even our guests can't see me. I have a blacked out Zoom camera. I'm here in a t-shirt surfing the internet, multitasking, what I love to do.
Yeah, it's your favorite thing.
And you want to rob this from me.
Rob your.
Why can't you leave me in peace? I mean, they think this is shtick. You know, I hate this entire thing. I hate the Macy's window project.
Can you admit one thing about the Macy's window project, though? I was there with Roe and Sabino and the rest of the Grown Up Italian crew a couple weeks ago. And when we finished, I happened to have a little poster that had our podcast logo on it. So I said, yeah, let me leave it here. I'll put it in the window facing out. I have gotten so much response from that. And even you have gotten some people in your universe that have said, wow, I walked past this, right?
No, I got Italian questions. Why did John buy the building? Is John opening up a restaurant with Rosella? Please tell me. I swear to God, I won't tell anybody. That's the response I got.
You know, for the life of me, I just don't understand why people think Ro and I would open a restaurant. I feel like that would be a life sentence of work.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it's actually a good idea.
I think it's the Titanic waiting to happen.
Because I would show up and go in the kitchen and just eat. I would put a dish towel. Everybody knows I wear a bib when I eat because I make a mess. I ruin my shirt to my ties.
Not just a bib. A monogrammed.
E sono troppo signora. What can I tell you? I got a nice monogram. I have multiple ones. And I carried them like hankies. And I stuff them in my shirt and I don't dribble. But I could go there and eat whenever I wanted. I mean, I don't think. I'd pay. I'm not cheap.
I see the upside for Pat. But John and I would.
And this idea of putting us in Macy's window. Like we're monkeys in the zoo.
You know, I got to say, I think that's something very Italian, right? The desire to share your table and, you know, I think a lot of people get enthusiastic about the idea either in a phase in their life or whatever it is that that Italian welcome and that desire to feed and show love through feeding is something that can be brought into the next level with the restaurant. I know a lot of people, good business people from incredibly successful careers prior. They go out, they identify talented chefs, and it is really hard, no matter where your location is, to make that work. I mean, they say something like, you know, 90% of restaurants in and around New York last under a year or something to that effect, or under 2 years, something like that.
You know, I think the failure rate is actually the first 6 months. And you know what, John? I'm actually slowly changing my position on this. I see you later in life, I don't think now, but later in life as like the new Frankie Pellegrino.
Oh, no.
Yes, please. Yes. But Susan Palarcho has to come with the package.
Yes, sure.
Whoever, whatever, we'll take whatever Fellini cast of characters will come with us. We'll take them all of them. They'll have a home. Like the new space is a home for all the characters to record, to create. But John's restaurant will be like our home.
John's restaurant. That is the greatest name.
It could be our home base because most of these people, like Joe Germanotta, if you don't know who Joe Germanotta is, he is the father of Stephanie Germanotta, otherwise known as Lady Gaga. And, you know, he opened a restaurant called Joanne Trattoria, named after his late sister on the Upper West Side, right, you know, steps away from where he lives. And one time I asked him, I was like, why the hell are you doing this? He's like, you know, it's just a place for me to hang out. I don't care if people come. I don't care if the food's that.
That's appealing. You know, but then you might as well just have people at the house.
No, because then they would get on your wife's nerve.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, that is true.
Because Nicole would shut that down real quick.
Yeah, Nicole's like one generational iteration away from putting plastic couch covers on our couches. So she's not, I mean, she loves having people over, but.
No, she would never admit it.
No, she would never admit it. Well, we moved, you know, we moved the good couch. We bought the couch from Italy. She always wanted it. We saved up. We bought the couch. And then the first time we had kids and family over and they actually sat on it, she moved it in the other room. And when there's nobody in the house but us, it's still, it's covered in a cloth cover.
Well, me and my mother and my mother, my grandmother, we never rejected plastic couches. My mother has all her 1968 French provincial furniture. It looks like she got it yesterday, all from the Johnson administration, all covered in plastic. And the plastic works. You tell me how many other people have couches from 1960. And I mean, and people think this is shtick. This is fact. They were right. One day, Nicole will come to a plastic-covered worldview.
Well, I mean, you got the cloth ones on.
I mean, it never fails. We all become our mothers. I remember the first apartment I got on my own. Like, I lasted 2 weeks, and I bought the vinyl tablecloth because it makes sense.
Yeah, we got the vinyl tablecloth with the fuzzies underneath it.
I mean, it's washable. It's wipeable.
Yeah.
It's just the most practical invention of modern time.
John, you know I have a guy who makes them custom.
I know you. You're probably the last bespoke custom couch cover person on the planet.
And a bespoke, he makes bespoke covers, clear plastic covers for table cloths. You send him your measurements and he cuts them because they're nice heavy duty plastic. Because if you have a tile, if you have a really nice kitchen table, you put the nice plastic clear cover on it and you never have to worry.
Yeah, but the way we are, we cover the nice plastic one.
And my mother does that. My mother has a two cover. My mother has a clear cover. And then my mother has a cover above the clear cover.
Right. Because we can't ruin the good stuff. You know, we still have to preserve that.
Because we're civilized people. That's been my argument on this podcast from day one.
We are the most civilized.
we certainly are in entombing our furniture and encasing our furniture and our textiles even. Now we're getting the fabrics being covered in plastic.
Write in if you think that we really should have a restaurant, a clubhouse of sorts. We can make it members only. We can make it open to the public.
John would love that.
We could just not let in the people we don't like.
I will not go unless Susan Pollarcho is included. You have to steal her from Rayo.
I don't know if I guess it's her family.
I think Susan would appreciate the effort.
Did I ever tell you guys about the time that I got catfished when I was like younger? I had not met Nicole yet.
What does that mean?
Did this happen more than once? Because I feel like I've definitely heard the catfish story.
No, it only happened once. Thank goodness. Catfishing, Pat's when you nowadays you meet somebody in the online dating circles and you know they have pictures and profile, and then in reality they're not the actual person. Sometimes it's nefarious.
You know what Pat Acasella, may rest in peace, from North Arlington used to say? People always use their confirmation pictures.
Well, no, it's not
meaning
even
that
like,
they use their, all right,
yeah,
go ahead,
their best shot, right? No, this is, I was young and single, hadn't met Nicole yet, and I decided to try the nascent online dating scene. And so, of course, you know, the big deal for me was I wanted to meet an Italian person. That was important to me. And so my profile was about all that stuff. And so one day I get a profile hit. This is before iPhones, so you had to do it through email. On a young Italian girl, and we start talking, and then we, you know, you see her picture, and but then it's phone calls. We have these great phone calls, and everything is wonderful, and she'll never meet in person, right? So I'm like, maybe she takes it slow. A nice Italian girl, good family, but she tells me all these details. I mean, the story is so fleshed out. So anyway, long story short, we start having conversations about what we'd like to do in the future, career wise, and I said, if I ever had a restaurant, what I would like to do would be something like you say, Ro, a small kind of private dining club. And I wanted
John's
to call,
place.
Well, I wanted to call it La Tavola Viola. And I wanted to basically take a replication of my family kitchen table that's been with us for decades and decades and decades, and then just paint it purple, right? The purple table, also my last name. And that'd be like the chef's table. You come in and like we'd cook together, whatever. That's like the special thing. So not long thereafter, I finally find out that this girl's not who she says she is. She's not Italian. She doesn't live where she says, blah, 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 blah. I took it like a champ. But about maybe a year later, like right before I met Nicole, I get an email from a new email address. And it's this girl in her real character telling me she's really sorry for what she did. But she does want me to know that the Tavola Viola idea was so good, she actually copied it and opened one in somewhere in Canada. So she took the name, the concept, the whole idea, the purple table. And I wanted to say, like, geez, you know, not bad enough that you defrauded me and lied to me, but you also took my restaurant idea. So I guess I'm out of the restaurant business. That's
but hold on. Wait. Let's back up. Is that still around today?
Who knows? I mean, you know,
I think it's worth a Google search.
No, thank you. Let me keep the past in the past, but that would have been my thing. Put everybody at, you know, the closest thing to the kitchen table I could make, which in my family is like an altar. You know, we worship at it. We celebrate at it. We mourn at it. Everything happens there. And, you know, I've always felt that was the big kind of secret to Italian American strength. It was like, as long as you got a kitchen table, you can go back to with the people you love and eat food that's familiar. And
even the people you don't love.
Yeah, that's frank. That's
and
quite
even
true,
the people
actually.
You
yeah.
can't stand.
Yeah, that's true. They'll be there too.
The place should look like the kitchen in Moonstruck.
Yeah. Oh, that is a good kitchen. And there's not many like that left anymore. Most of those have been ripped out. That was a great kitchen.
You know the stuff they always this modern decoration for kitchens, these like wooden signs that are painted.
Yeah.
They always have Italian phraseology.
Yes, that's true.
They're not coherent. They'll be like amore cucina. Cucina, amore, Stella, you know, they throw Italian words on, but I mean, they're not throwing Norwegian words.
No, the kitchen's ours.
You know, yeah, that's ours.
Yeah, the kitchen, I think, internationally.
The French attempt to try to take it, but, you know, you occasionally see like a French phrase, but it's ours. Yeah, it's ours.
No, because you know what it is too? Like, we talk about this a lot, right? The French concept of cuisine is a science. It's strict recipes. It's rules. It's physics. The Italian concept is jazz. It's art. It's just like, you know, you go in, whatever ingredients you have. I mean, Ro, you've spent 15 years studying the result of that and cataloging the result of that. How many of these recipes that you must encounter were, you know, what is it known to say? Oh, I made it up or I added this. So it was like you said in the new book, do it your way, freestyle.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like telling people what to do. So that's when I get the sips from Italy, the snotty Italian people that try and come on there and tell me, you know, oh, this is not the correct way. And I'm like, what's the correct? What does that even mean? Like the guy who made this up the first time 150 years ago, was he really worried about doing it the correct way?
Yeah, but I think Italians just love criticism.
That's probably true.
Because they break their own rules. Like I think Italian Americans who are disconnected or Americans in general don't realize what Italians say they do and what they do are two separate things.
Well, people don't realize that, especially in the food blogging space, if you are a quote unquote real Italian from Italy, you got an accent, you know, that accent's going to get you really, I mean, I'm just saying, like, they can do no wrong. They could make like our guest that's going to come on. She's a real Italian. She's born in Italy. She's got this, she's a fabulous woman, fabulous accent, fabulous way about her. And thank God she makes wonderful dishes that are, you know, mostly authentic, sometimes colored with, you know, an Italian American flair, but she could make hamburger helper and they would be like, oh yes, wonderful.
Yeah, you get a lot of credit for being born in Italy in the Italian blogosphere for sure. There's this very self-aware sense that Italians can do the jazz, but everybody else follow along. And I don't think we as Italian Americans count.
Hold on, because they don't know real Italians.
Yeah, it's probably true.
There's two Italians. There's the Italian of the fur coat. And then there's the Italian of the house dress.
Very true.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that my grandmother wore both of them.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And they're changing. It's a changing. I know an Italian American who's an actual, I don't want to out them because they're a dear friend. And the family put tap water in Panta bottles. My grandmother would, if they had bottled water in America in the 90s, my grandmother would have pulled that stunt 100%.
Absolutely.
My grandmother would have enjoyed that she pulled it off on people that they thought that it was real when it wasn't. That's a very Neapolitan thing. That's a 100% Neapolitan thing. I got to pull one over on you. But I think that the Medigan people, it's very easy to trip them up. And I feel sorry for them because they're taken. Because my grandmother, if my grandmother could have sold them tap water and aquapana bottles, she would have done it and smiled.
I know restaurants that put Fortissimo and Carlo Rossi in like the good house wine bottles.
Wow.
Yeah.
But shame on the person who buys it and can't tell the difference.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
If they're not, why not? I love Carlo. I don't know why people beat up on Carlo Rossi.
I love Carlo Rossi.
When I love that. I'm so tired of having to defend my love of Carlo Rossi and Fortissimo.
But that's the whole point of today's episode, right? It's about doing the stuff that is authentic to you and that is comfortable and welcoming. And really, yes, like we say, right? You can jazz up a recipe. You can change. You could take what you have available. I try to do that all the time. You could even do it to family recipes. But there is, on the other side of the coin, a real value to knowing how those who came before you in your family did what they did, not because of rules, but because food is an amazing transmitter of culture, memory. Obviously, scent and taste are the greatest engagers of memory that we have. So I think, you know, we were talking about this the other night, right? There's always that sense of like, oh, I can't make it like my nonna made it, or I can't make it like my mom made it, or my uncle, or whatever it is. And you probably can't make it because everybody's different. But there is something to be said about being able to access that. And today's guest has done a really, really good job in reacting to—
a fantastic job.
Yeah.
An outstanding job.
Yeah, at making sure that that's available for her family and for others now. So Alessandra Aiello, born in Vico Equense, Naples, here in the United States now, and has engaged in a project that I think is really worth our while. So I think our listeners are going to really enjoy. So Alessandra, welcome to the Italian American Podcast.
Thank you for having me. This is really an honor today, really.
Oh, thank you.
Been here 47 years. So I was only 10 years old. Don't do the math so quickly, because that means you could all be my children.
not me.
That's true.
Not me. But I'm gonna run with that, because take whatever I can get. Povera me, cumancia fa.
No, con buon sangue napolitano, secondo me.
That's right.
Sempre fresco e tosto, come dicono a Napoli.
I'll tell you why. Why was I so determined to get Alessandra, the honor of having Alessandra this show?
Oh, thank you.
Because there's two things. There's what she's doing as the project that she's doing that we want to talk about. But, you know, Ro, all credit to Ro. Ro was the proto authentic Italian American cook or presenter of cooks, if I articulate that correctly. And since then, there's been an explosion, right? And Instagram and YouTube and Facebook and whatever my algorithm is, I'm bombarded with all people who are cooking online now. Right. All Italian American or Italian cooks or Italian Australian cooks cooking online. And when I started to get Alessandra's videos, I said, this lady, her food smells familiar. And I said, but this is my— because there's my grandmother's side. My gastronomic side is Piano di Sorrento. Right. And the Sorrentine Peninsula is a subset of Naples. Right. So it's in the Neapolitan family of cooking, but it's distinct. It's very much distinct. And I saw her recipes and I said, but this is us. This is us. I said, she has to be from the Sorrento Peninsula, because too many— it was like an investigative, like things would pop. And I could go through the dishes she did and I could see which were new ones that she had taken from family or friends or from other places and made her own, and which one were part of my catalog, basically our shared connectivity. And I was so blown away because it really was the authentic food of the Sorrento Peninsula. And then when I found out her story, and Alessandra, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you are taping that you began this project during the pandemic.
Yes.
To pass on to your children, exactly, the family recipes, and to take the family recipe one step further and to show them how it was done actually step by step filmed.
Exactly. So pandemic hit and, you know, I needed to stay busy. And my husband said— my husband's a true believer, like, you're an amazing cook. And I'm like, you know, I'm a housewife. I'm an Italian housewife. This is what we do. And I think that everybody does. So anyway, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to die and my kids will open up a can of SpaghettiOs, whatever it's called.
the great fear.
And I said, right then and there, my grandparents are going to be turning in their grave doing somersaults. So I said, you know what, if you go back some of my earlier videos, you could see the depression of quarantine, of being home and, okay, this is what we're making. But I really wanted to put the simple recipes, because Italian food is all about the great ingredient with simplicity, putting it together in a certain way where everything has to come together, the fresh ingredients, the way you cook it, the smell, the frying. Even when you fry something, it has a different sound from when you started to when it's ending. And I just needed to get it on for my own children. And then, of course, my friends and family, you got to keep going. And I am so thrilled that I am. Now, you guys talked about the restaurants and Italian American and me being born in Italy. If I opened up a restaurant, I would call it the best of both worlds.
Mm. Yeah, we get that. In Italy, they don't get that, but we get that. We get that totally.
Yeah, and I think they do. You know, it's nice to kind of say, oh, in Italy, they feel like we're the original. Whatever you do is like you're messing it up. Not true. Things are changing there too. And that's also another thing I like to push through my channel is that not only we're moving forward, they've moved forward too. My aunt's recipes are evolving too. And my cousin. So I just came back. I was there 10 days. And oh my God, did I need those 10 days in my life? It was just nothing but amazing. And what was amazing? Now, a lot of the older aunts and uncles are gone. So now it's a question is keeping these relationships with the cousins. And a lot of it was cooking together. And it all evolves around the kitchen. It really does.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Can I jump in? Because
yes,
you hit such a, like I said, I'm so excited over this particular episode. I belong to a group called Fundamental Gastronomics of the Sorrento Peninsula. I have to put you in. It's like an academy. It's like an academy, the Fundamentalisti Gastronomici. And I have had very in-depth discussions because my grandmother's food is a fly in amber of like 1901. So the food that I eat, like for instance, we had a big discussion over lasagna, right? Now my grandmother's lasagna was only rigotte. It was rigotte, mozzarella, chopped up eggs and parsley. That was the lasagna that I grew up in. And as you know, my grandmother's family is from Trinidad. We actually had a mozzarella and a rigotte business up there.
Okay.
And everyone said, oh, no, it's about bechamel and everything. And then as I said, no, this is the authentic Sorrento recipe. But to make a long story short, people who would say in their boomers, like in their 70s now in the group, or people who even in their 60s said, yeah, I remember that lasagna. That was the lasagna from, let's say, the 50s back. But when rye comes on, and newspapers become, the lasagna of the Sorrento Peninsula evolved. And a lot of people start saying, yeah, I remember. Yeah, we would just have on holiday, special occasion, a lasagna that was only ricotta, mozzarella, grated cheese. Now let's go through something else. In that area, what was it pezzutella? What was the cheese that they would make at home, that hard cheese, the cow's milk cheese?
A cacciottella, which is a cacciotta, cacciottina, cacciottella in Napolitano.
It's like a hockey puck. It's like a white hockey puck.
Yes. I'm so sorry I brought it back from Italy, but I gave it away to my siblings.
You were close, Pat.
Next time. If next you time, want me to
send for it. Yeah, next time, make an order.
I make that at home. I'm a whacked out person. I make that at home. I got the form and everything. I put it in the salt water.
Yeah.
and if you take the grating cheese of the Sorrento Peninsula before the war, it was that cheese and it was Caciocavallo that was aged. And after the war, the Pecorino Romano, which started to come in, the Parmigiano Reggiano, but they are new cheeses. Yes. They are something new that evolved. It's evolutionary, right? We make something else at home. My grandmother make aioli, and she would throw raisins in it.
Yes, of
course. Thank you.
And nuts and walnuts.
Yes, and walnuts.
I did a recipe with my cousin in Italy. That should be coming out this weekend.
This is why I'm so excited about what you're doing. And well, there was only one other girl in that group, and these are the gastronomic heavyweights of the peninsula that said, yeah, my grandmother makes that, because that's a recipe that comes from really a cucina povera, really impoverished times,
right?
When Lent was very strict, there was no meat, people ate meat a few times a year. But in Italy, that's wealthy. An aioli, for those who don't know, it's spaghetti with garlic and oil with the raisins thrown in, which is really Neapolitan, right? Raisins and pine nuts are like, go so far deep into our tradition.
And the brajol
that's gone extinct because it's a place that's become richer, more affluent. They can eat stuff that they couldn't eat before. And these dishes have disappeared. But you, with what you're doing, you're preserving for all eternity, not just for your kids, but for the people of the Sorrento Peninsula, for everybody, for a Norwegian out of Minnesota who wants to try something different, you've made a catalog of real home family cooking.
Oh, thank you.
And I think it's fantastic. And that can only people just access what you're doing for their own families. Because like me and my mother sometimes will disagree on how my grandmother did something. You know, she'll say, and I'm always right, because, and I'll tell you why I'm always right, because I paid attention like a scientist with what my grandmother did. I used to take very diligent notes. But you know, if you had the actual videotape, what a better way to preserve the memories of a family. Like I wish that my great grandparents, people that I never met, my mother always said she never, all her grandparents were dead before she was born. She never had a grandparent.
Oh.
How beautiful would it be if we not only had videos, you know, to see a video of your great grandmother cooking something, or your great great grandmother. And as bizarre and crazy as that sounds to some people today, Alessandra is ahead of the game, because that's going to be the reality of the Gen Z kids.
Oh, thank you.
That's going to be the reality.
Yeah.
You know, Pat, you make a point that I want to ask Alessandra about. This was on my hit list. Alessandra, first and foremost, how many kids do you have?
I have three girls.
Three girls. Okay.
Three girls. They're 28, 24, and 16 now.
God bless you.
Thank you. My two oldest fluent in Italian, 100%. The baby a little less, the 16-year-old, but oh boy, does she understand everything I say. Can I share a little episode about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so my aunt from Italy, I speak to Italy every day, whether it's a cousin, an aunt, everybody does phone call to Italy every day. And we were not, my mother did not allow for us to lose the dialect or the Italian.
A language. Napoletano is a language.
Exactly, exactly. Un napoletano, sempre, solamente napoletano. So, and we still speak like that. You know, with my siblings, we speak half English, half napoletano, and half italiano. So my aunt was telling me that unfortunately her son and daughter-in-law had marital problems. And, you know, I said to her, Daddy, parla napoletana street to street. I said, speak Neapolitan very tight. So I have Sabrina in the car and I don't want her to understand. Okay. So Zerita went along, tells me the story, what's going on. Fine. I get home. We get out of the car. My daughter sees the baby gets out. She must have been eight. She sees my husband. She says, "Daddy, Daddy, Carmela and Pasquale are no longer together. They were very marital problems." Street to street. So
she knew what was important. There was the skills
there.
She knew
what was important. Exactly. Yeah, she liked the polpetta, like we say in Napoletano.
And you know, essentially, this is your inspiration, your vision, right? Is these three daughters that you want to share what is important to you, and I think, you know, culturally to many of us, the idea of how we eat, when we eat, where we eat, and those things. But it makes sense to do it during COVID. Everybody had time on their hands, a lot more cooking. We saw that nationally. What made you decide to put it on YouTube?
My husband always had this vision. He's been begging me to do these videos for years and years and years. Let's say 12 years ago. But then I do the math. 12 years ago, I had two teenagers on my hands and a three-year-old. I have time?
Yeah, video. You're lucky. You could,
but
yeah.
Good move for me. I was lucky. I was running. But anyway, so he always had this vision. He had this passion for my cooking, because what he realized that when people ate my food was the joy that it gave them. That sense of belonging, that sense of sharing. That's why I called it Alessandra's Food is Love. Not so much the love for the cooking, but the love I get from the people when they eat it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, my gosh. We were just talking about that on a previous episode with another guest, the idea that it's how we show love, right? Like the first thing you say to somebody is, you know, you talk to them, oh, why don't you come over and eat? And Pat and Ro were talking about our friend Susan Palercio earlier, who is part of the family at Rao's. Her cousin, Buonanima Frankie Pellegrino, was world famous for his restaurant there. But you know, Susan says all the time that it wasn't just even Sunday meals in the old days. It was come over for coffee after work, and who has a company cake waiting or something you made. And, you know, for us, yeah, the table is the place to love. That's obvious.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So you started doing this. You put them on YouTube. What was the response? When did you realize you had something on your hands that was bigger than you imagined?
John, I don't even know if I have something on my hand. I just keep doing it because I love it. It gives me... I'm not even looking at financial gain or fame. I'm just happy to do it. I'm just happy to, you know, my husband gets so, it's like, oh, I just got an idea. Sometimes I stay, I wake up in the middle of the night. It's like, oh, I got to make that. I haven't made that. Like steak pizzaiola was so big for me because it was the memory that goes with the steak pizzaiola. And it was, you know, days at the beach. And I also, as a young girl, I always went to Italy every year. So through high school, I worked part-time after school, made my money, and I went off to Italy for the summer. And one year I ended up flying into Zurich because it was the cheapest ticket I could get. But then I had to take a train from Zurich down to Napoli. So on my way down, it all worked out. But on my way up, my aunt and uncle dropped me at the train station in Napoli. And now they were petrified that a young 18-year-old was on a train overnight alone going to Zurigo. So we get into the couchette car. And of course, traveling, there's a family and they're going to Zurich too. And of course, the first thing my aunt and uncle do is like, oh, vi raccomando, mia nipote, state l'attenta, è giovane, è pericolosa, no? Tutte le raccomandazioni. So sure enough, the train takes off and a half hour in, this family opens up, a suitcase full of food. And what comes out? These big breads, crusty Italian breads with slices of pizzaiola in it. And tutta amoligo, tutta voce, che la salsa, tutta voce, delicious. All the greasy sauce into the amoligo. And I think I'll never forget that pizzaiola sandwich for the rest of my life.
That is too cool. I never thought of a pizzaiola sandwich. You have changed my life. You really have. I've done a braciole sandwich. I have never done a pizzaiola sandwich.
That sounds delicious.
That is delicious. Yeah. Wow. You know, that's it. From the Neapolitan brain, this is what comes, the creativity.
Yeah.
You changed my life because I changed the way I make spaghetti with mussels because of you.
Really?
Yes. Your spaghetti and mussels recipe.
Okay.
Everybody go out there. You have to find it. There's a trick you have in there.
Yeah.
I want them to go online and to see it. I'm not going to give it away. That was a game changer.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I showed my mother. We had a committee meeting. My mother doesn't like, my mother doesn't like change. My mother doesn't like change. I said, let's give it a shot. And I was like, wow, because the mussel taste, I like spaghetti and mussels white.
Yeah.
I mean, I like mussels with tomato sauce, but there's something, you know what I had in Piano di Sorrento? They put saffron.
Yes.
That's how I do it. I put the saffron in my my mussels. It's like what
you put, but that's something, is that something new?
I don't even know where I got it.
That's a question I have.
Something new. That's something new. Absolutely. Like I said, they're evolving too.
Thank you.
They're evolving too. So their recipes are changing. Have you watched my egg clip on Mijana video where my aunt makes a batter? No more coating into the flour and the egg. And she makes a batter with the egg and the flour and a little milk. And you just drench it as much as you want. And those little eggplants with the heat extremely hot, they don't suck up a drop of oil.
That's how we do the eggplant for Parmigiana. We do a pastella. We do
a pastella. Perfetto. Rosé, tu sei bravissima. Ti adoro.
Thank you.
Rosa. And we have, you know, Rossella and I have friends in common.
Who we have in common? Wait.
Well, the people, Giuameta, Antonio.
Oh, yes.
La Limuri.
Oh, my God. I love that place. I could die there. Patrick, you got to take a trip to this joint.
Where is it?
It's in Meta.
Alimuri.
Oh, it's in Meta.
Alimuri Beach. Yes.
Yeah. La Conca Alimuri. This is one of my favorite seafood restaurants in all of.
You can't beat the fish in that area.
It's right on
you
the.
You can't beat the fish in that area.
Oh, my God. One time we actually started going there when I was doing the cooking with Nona Tours. And my tour operator, Pasquale, that is like Mr. Sorrento. He was married to a woman who owned 7 pharmacies in Sorrento. So, you know, he became a pharmacist too. Never went to school, but became a pharmacist. And he knows everybody there. So he hooked us up with La Conca. And the first time we went there, they made a dinner that they never really made again for us because, you know, the first time is always they're trying to impress you. But they made le frittelle delle alghe.
Algae. Oh, yes. Seafood, seaweed
Oh my God.
It's a pole le alga.
Oof. This is one of the best things. I mean, talk about nothing, making something out of nothing. Algae that feed, like, you know, algae.
Seaweed. So it's a seaweed.
Seaweed. It is seaweed.
Seaweed mixed with a little flour and water, fried, and it was the best thing ever. Then they made these profiteroli al limone. I dream about those at night.
You know, hearing you and Ro talk about the recipes you love, the places you love, it's obvious to everybody out there and both of your audiences, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who watch you both, how much you love to cook, to feed, to eat, to think about these things. It's an art form, right? And one of the things you guys both have done, you know, it's not just a matter of your family can see your recipes, or now through the technology of YouTube and Facebook and all these different platforms, somebody else can see your recipes. But it's also, like, I think it's safe to say, Pat's favorite thing about our doing this show, which is these are also time capsules now. So 100 years from now, 200 years from now, God willing, if somebody wants to understand how their great-great-grandparents did something, there's a chance that they can learn it from what you've created, because it lives on in perpetuity. And I think back to when I lost my grandmother, she taught me my paternal family recipes, and there were certain things that I just couldn't recreate. I've talked on the show a couple of times about my dad asking me to make what my grandmother used to call devil fish, and we couldn't figure it out. We finally figured it out on a trip to Priano last year. He mentioned it, somebody knew, but it was hadn't been called that since 1900. But you guys have created a sort of an alternative version, because, you know, most cookbooks, they're everything's super tested and it's got to be good enough for the measurements. And like, that's not necessarily natural to Italian cooking. And here you guys are with either your memory or people that you bring in Ro's case, creating alternatives and revealing tricks and tips and things that people don't think about. I can remember when I lost my grandmother, desperately trying to find a cookbook that I could use as a guide. I think I found one that was an Italian American lady, and I'm going to forget what it's called. It was a big book with the lady on the cover. I still have it.
Yolanda Eloide?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Eloide, the Italian immigrant cookbook?
Might be the Italian immigrant cookbook.
Okay, hold on. Let me grab it. I have it. I'll show you.
Don't you love that?
Yeah, I bet that's it.
Maybe this one right here?
Yeah, that's it. That's the book.
Yeah.
I remember when that book came out. That book came out in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
That was kind of revolutionary in the fact that it was just, it was the celebration of the Italian-American home cook. A lot like what Marianne Esposito was doing.
Yeah, very different. And it was the only resource where I felt like I could turn, and it's out of print now, obviously, many, many years, but it was the only resource that I felt I could turn to where I wasn't going to get like a lab-tested recipe. I was going to get a version of what my grandmother did and the reasons why behind it. And it was a huge guidepost for me in recreating what I didn't know from my grandmother teaching me, or recipes that had fallen out in my family even before I was born. And that's the kind of resource you guys are creating here. You're giving people guideposts and you're giving them a snapshot. And that's invaluable food anthropology, really.
Thank you so much, John. I also want to add, for what you said, that was also very, very important to me, because I said, if I'm gone, I want my kids, they'll be looking in old cookbooks, but they'll never get what I made them. I wanted them to have what their comfort food tasted like, because, you know, sometimes you need a recipe, you're just overwhelmed. There's so much out there, especially lately, everybody's putting on stuff, and sometimes it's upsetting what people really put up. What they put, not that I feel that I'm better. No, everybody's got to do their own thing, which is
no.
Safe.
But you know,
I do something one way, you do something another way. But then ci sono questi cretini.
Non parlammo proprio, Rosse, per favore, c'è da piangere.
They spear the hot dogs with spaghetti and boil them. These people.
Yeah, but they're are any of them Italian?
Maybe, I don't know, or whatever. But there is such a thing in my head as food blogger jail, as pasta jail. I'm creating a list. And one day when the reckoning comes, these people will all be sent to an island. You know who I'm talking about.
I know.
All these one pan.
Nothing aggravates me like one pan.
What does that mean, one pan?
It's like, yeah, but they do it. I understand one pot pasta. I get it because, you know, technically pasta patate is like a one
pot. One pot, of course, pasta, of course.
But they take it to the next level because then they cook the pasta in like heavy cream and chicken broth, yeah, and then they add all the crap to it.
And brown it up with cheddar cheese on top. Don't forget the cheddar.
Yeah, with Velveeta. Yeah. These are the people that put Kraft singles on top of Big Ziti.
They don't do that, do they? I mean, God forbid.
Yeah, they do. They do. Sorry, guys. Pat, they do. I've seen a few.
See, that's why I don't leave Jersey. That's why I stay in North Jersey, because I'm not exposed to these things.
Patrick, we're going to sit you down and force you to watch all these videos, and we're going to get your reactions, because you wouldn't believe it. He's not going to believe it until we show.
See, some people, I have a friend who's not Italian-American, who makes what they call Italian food. And, you know, let's not go there, right? It is what it is.
Yeah.
And I went out. I learned a lesson in humility. I went out and I got the Michelle Ciccolone's book. It's like 1,000 Italian recipes. I think it's a very good primer for someone who wants to start Italian cooking who's not Italian. And they looked at it. I gave it as a gift. Like, I didn't come out and say, your food stinks. Here, take this book. So I'm like, oh, you like to cook Italian food. And I saw that they kind of like, well, what do I need this for? And they like what they make. It's not my food, but they put in all kinds of stuff, like, you know, all these seasonings and stuff like that. And it's their food.
Yeah, look, I mean, people have to be comfortable with what they eat. And that food is personal. Food is memory. And
I don't want to be like the Italian from Italy who comes in like the cops. I'm going to blow a whistle. I mean, it's a tight line to walk as I think about it now. You know, there is the Italian police with us that we want to blow the whistle on them and send them to jail. And then there's also, like, you know, I don't want to be like the guy from Italy who goes on to Rose social media profiles, these people who kind of like haunt her and criticize. I don't know, Ro, this is kind of deep. This is a deeper episode than I thought it would be.
Yeah, but there's a line, Patrick, when you catch people putting ketchup on pasta, you know.
Yeah, correct. I blow the whistle on that, but they're condemned. I mean, what am I going to say?
No.
I mean, like, if you want, I mean, that's why we came to America. So you could. Put in Italy, you can't put ketchup on pasta, but in America, you could. So, should I tell Brad out in Missouri, Brad, how do you eat that?
Yeah,
I don't know. That's deep. It's deep.
But don't call it Italian food. Don't call it Italian. Don't call it authentic.
Well, you can't call it authentic.
It's just what you like. Yeah, go on. But that's why I wanted, like, Rossella is known as recipe and the moms. This is my recipe, my family recipes. A detail for my daughters. Now, if there's people out there that could be of interest and they could enjoy it, you know, wonderful. But if not, it's okay too. I understand. And then there's their, like, I'm passionate about the seasons. You know, I think I'm in Italy. I go out every day food shopping. I go get my fresh bread, the fresh vegetables. I only decide when I see what's out in the market. So now I created the lasagna, the bechamel lasagna with butternut squash and sausage. That's my own creation. Can you call it Italian? Can you call it American?
Yeah, but that it's a beautiful thing. We don't celebrate the evolution. My grandmother invented her own pastiera.
Oh.
Because I make the pastiera like you with the gran and the crema pasticcia and the ricotta.
Yeah.
My grandmother's father grew up in Arzano outside of Naples.
Okay.
And he was born there and he grew up in Torre del Greco. And my grandmother amalgamated. She made a pastiera, and it's actually in a cookbook, in Rosetta Costantino's cookbook on Southern Italian desserts. She took spaghetti and she added spaghetti, which is the what they make the pastiera with in the Paese Vesuviana.
Yes, certo.
She added spaghetti to a ricotta sugar base.
Yes.
And she put like cherries in it, right? The amarena cherries. And my grandmother created this because the Neapolitans are always creators, right? And my grandmother created this. It's the most delicious thing.
Yes.
And she created it.
But not in Napoli. Now you're talking Caserta.
Yeah, the Paese. If you go outside, out like north, like Sant'Antimo, Arzano, that area. Right. And then toward the Greco, they have a spaghetti pastiera tradition.
Yes.
So my grandmother amalgamated, because my grandmother was creative like that. She amalgamated the spaghetti pasta. For those who have not tried it, it's absolutely delicious.
Of course.
And because spaghetti can also be used in the really poor parts of the province of Naples, their spaghetti was also used in desserts. They make a spaghetti pastiera with just eggs
omigliaccio. That's used a carnevale. Quindi omigliaccio e pasta si fa roce e si fa salata. Lo fanno dolce e salato.
Delicious thing we make.
Yes, yes. Il migliaccio.
And my argument is that people like you are evolving the culture. You know, I found this. If you go to parts of the United States that had immigration in the 1880s from very, very poor parts of Italy, Calabria and Basilicata, the Italian menu was very, very limited. And the reason is that their ancestors in Italy kind of were eating the same thing all the time because there wasn't a lot available. It was a lot of greens. It was a lot of beans. It was a lot of macaroni, a lot of frizzale, stale bread. And maybe on Christmas and Easter, you had a piece of meat. You didn't have fish. You were in the interior. But now if you go to those parts of Italy, you know, now their cuisine has exploded because, you know, now trucks come from all over Italy and bring fresh fish everywhere, right? Now you have a pasticcera. Before, you couldn't, I mean, why do we deep fry our desserts? I've said it here a million times. Because a bread oven was too hot for a cake. Now gas ovens come with dials, you can control temperature. So Italy's food has evolved. So why shouldn't Italy's diaspora evolve food when the hallmarks, the concepts of quality, freshness, authenticity, I would love to try your, now I'm going to have to convince my mother because my mother's my mother, but the butternut ricotta lasagna, why not try
ricotta,
something different?
No ricotta.
Oh, how do you go? Bechamel. You may go bechamel.
Bechamel, the butternut squash and the layer of mozzarella, the fresh layers of lasagna sheets, really delicious. I'll be making it for Thanksgiving.
It's funny how lasagna is our first course on Thanksgiving.
Oh, it's got to be. We're Italian-Americans. It's got to be.
Yes, yes.
That's the thing I love about our culture, and it speaks to, you know, this whole best of both worlds thing. It's like we come to America, all of a sudden we have this new landscape of ingredients, this abbondanza, we have a little bit more money, we have new holidays to make up new things for.
Yeah.
So you give Italians Thanksgiving, and they run with it and do wonderful things like these butternut squash or pumpkin pastel fornos. And these, you know, it's like, oh, Americans do this on Thanksgiving, but we're going to do this because we're us.
Exactly.
You know, I never thought about that, Ro. That's an interesting thing. I always think about we encountered new ingredients and, you know, particularly things like, you know, chicken and stuff like that are used so differently here than they were in Italy when our people were coming here. But I never thought about the fact that we were encountering new holidays, and we have this sort of blank slate. I mean, you have the American traditions that were there, but you can add to that and customize it the way you want. That's really interesting. I that's something I'm going to noodle over. I never really thought about that.
I love, as a food blogger, as a creator, I love making things for like things that just don't exist in Italy. Like I love making Italian American Halloween stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it gives me such joy because I feel like it's something that is just for my specific little community. And some of the stuff, only our people would even get it. Like they don't, like I made a strega cookies with strega glaze, you know, because it was, you know, witchy and Halloween-y and stuff. And it's just like an Italian nut cookie with a glaze made out of strega, which is a very Italian liqueur and stuff. But that's something so personal to our community that helps us feel like we're participating.
I love that. I got to try that. We'll send love with the
strega. Very good. You love them.
I love strega.
You do. I'm not a big strega.
I'm not going to make them, Alessandra, because I'm going to have someone make them for me. Oh. Someone's dragging me to an online, a studio, Macy's window.
It's the fusion between like our old school, like nonna recipes. Like it's an olive oil cookie dough, but then you put a strega glaze and you do the fun metagon sprinkles and stuff. And you have it. Fun in the way Americans have fun with their food, with glazed decoration that, you know, is very, you know, because cookies, especially in Italy and especially in Southern Italy, are not like always jazzy.
No,
no, at all, at all.
No, they're biscuity.
Yeah.
They're made to be dunkers.
Yeah, the dunkers.
Italian cookies are made to be dunked in either wine or coffee or milk or something.
That's true.
But we're not frosting people. We're not glazy frosting sprinkle people. The Americans sprinkle everything. They color, they food color everything. You know, I love it. It. Not all the time, but you know, it's got a time and a place. And all is for an Italian American content creator, it's really the time where you get to have the most fun with your, it's my favorite season. That and like Valentine's Day, especially because in Italy, they don't do big, you know, bordello Valentine's Day things. In America, you get to make, you know, the heart pasta and the heart cakes and dress them all. And you can have fun with like the base being very Italian and very high quality ingredients, but have a little bit more fun and playfulness with your execution.
Most times when we tape a lot on Fridays, and I intermittent fast a lot on Fridays, almost every Friday.
That's not a good idea.
But today I didn't because I knew it was going to be bad. The worst thing is to intermittent fast and have a conversation about food. And I knew right when the hunger pains would kick in around lunchtime where we are now, that with this episode would put me over the deep end. So I purposely, you know what I had? But I got to tell you what I had for breakfast. Yeah. I had leftover aioli, but if you have it left over, the oil, when you cook the oil, makes the spaghetti.
It was right at the bottom.
Yeah. And then I have monkfish cooked in tomatoes, but the monkfish gives out so much liquid. When I finished the monkfish, there was a lot of liquid left. And I warmed up the liquid from the sauce of the monkfish, and I poured it over whole wheat frizzale. Oh. That is the breakfast of champions. Wheaties had nothing on me today.
No, for sure.
Oh, you got to try that. If you're out there, get monkfish. Cooking in a tomato sauce is going to get nice and watery. And then pour and then that liquid.
Soaks like the biscotto. Pat, guess where I'm headed right after this?
Where?
La Sorrentina.
Oh, they're your cousins.
Yeah. No, that's my best friend, Lena.
Oh, that's your best friend.
She's from Vicky Quenze, too.
You know who I knew she was Vicky Quenze?
What?
Our first time I went in there, I saw how long her pizzas were.
Right, like Pizza Metro.
And Vicky Quenze, for those who don't know, Vicky Quenze makes a pizza only made in Vicky Quenze, which is a very, very, very long pizza.
Goes by the meter.
And I was there and I said, I smell Vicky Quenze here.
Yeah. Yeah, but I want to tell you a little bit about, if I could, just a second, a little bit about Piano di Sorrento. Piano di Sorrento in the late 1800s had a terrible earthquake. So the homes on the beach were called Cassano, where the earthquake did not touch it. And that means case sane. And then the top part with the Trinità is, that's called Carruottolo, Napoletano. Carruottolo meaning case rotte.
So healthy houses, broken houses.
Broken up. So the northern part of the area got destroyed and the bottom by the water was saved.
It's such a beautiful place.
And Trinità was a post for swapping out horses. So when the horses came from Vicky Quenze on the way to Positano, they stopped in the Trinità, and that's where the horse were fed and swapped out to continue up the hill.
I never knew that. That's incredible.
I have a dear friend, Dr. Massimo Maresca, who's 90 years old. And this is what we talk about. We speak Napoletano, and we talked about before, always having people come in. My doors are always open. I always have coffee on. I always have something cooking. And I always have people just stopping in, which I love.
Do you know that church in Trinidad, the Church of Trinidad, and the altar to Maruna del Rosario that's on the side?
Yes.
That's my ninth great grandfather's who's in that marble.
Oh, wow.
Pasquale Lardaro. Wow. Oh, but I'm done. John wants to go. John yells wonderful. At me because we got to go now. It's like the cop.
So sorry.
I'm sorry, John. Don't hit me. But if it was Sicilians, oh, it'd be all afternoon. How do you fry your gardoons? Oh, let me guess. What did you have last night? Eggplant and swordfish? If it was Sicilians, I'd be,
easy
yeah. I'm in the Nabudan naughty box, as usual.
You anti-Sicilian, always.
I never said that.
No, you know what? That's what it's all about. My door is always open. My table's the seat of the table is always slightly warm from the last person there and welcoming to the next person there. And, you know, that comes through on your videos and all the work you're doing. So
thank you.
Congratulations. And
thank you.
I hope there's plenty more.
And my call to action is if you want to watch real authentic Italian food, Neapolitan food, Sorrentine food that you can make at home, you have to go. Alessandra made one mistake. She named her website Alessandra's Food is Love. What she should have named it was Alessandra the Great. Because Alessandra,
you
are Alessandra the Great. That is your new name, Alessandra the Great.
Alessandra La Grande.
I want you to go out there. I want you to follow her social media. I want you, you're on everything, right? YouTube,
yes, and TikTok,
TikTok, all this stuff. And I want you to go on her website, on her YouTube, and you got to try her spaghetti and mussels in a white sauce.
Wow.
Out of this world. But then if I keep talking, John's going to yell at me.
Yeah, now I'm hungry.
That's Joe Chicho. That's my Uncle Chicho. I got to mention, just the, John, please, just real quick. So my husband and I were in Italy. My husband likes everything red. And so he wanted spaghetti with the mussels. And my uncle said to my aunt, no, India, I'm going to do white sauce. And my husband was like going crazy. He wanted the tomato sauce. Mm. And it took 15 years to my husband finally agree and say, you know, Joe Chicho was right.
And where's your husband from in Italy?
No, my husband's not Italian. That's for another episode, and I'll share you more about why that. Food is love.
Ma che fortuna che ti ha sposata a te, whatever.
Via Thais. Rosè, non lo dire che dicono che lo chiamano Santo Medi. Lascia stare. But I do want to add something else. You, John, at the beginning, you mentioned, you know, do you feel what you're doing? If you're doing something great, I don't feel I'm doing anything great, but thank you. Maybe after today I will. But I got to say, when Rosella sent me a message maybe 2 years ago, and I saw that Rosella recognized me, that's when I knew I had made it. That's when I said, wow. Oh, my God. Beautiful.
I think you're wonderful. You are a true, authentic Italian mama. One day you're going to be the most wonderful Italian nonna, making food with love. Tell everybody exactly where to find you. What's the name of your website? What's Instagram?
I am, everything's pretty much under alessandrasfoodislove.com. That's where you can print the recipes. TikTok and Instagram are shorter versions of my recipes. If you want the full episode, it's on YouTube and it's under Alessandra's Food is Love. But I cannot thank you all so much for really having me participate today. It's been wonderful. Thank you. Grazie di cuore.
Oh, thank you.
Vi voglio bene.
Same to you from all of us. Thank
you.
Oh, wait, one more thing.
One more thing. Let's plan a trip to Italy together.
Oh, mamma mia. That's to twist our arms.
Alessandra, remember, you and I come from the Beverly Hills of Italy.
That's it. You got it, Pat. You got it. Thank you, Pat.
Oh, he's the greatest. Well, I would be happy to go to the Beverly Hills of Italy with you, and I am sure that would make for not only a really enjoyable trip, but some very, very interesting videos with this crew going to Italy together. So I think everybody out in the audience would be looking forward to that. So thank you for all you're doing, for being here, sharing with us. And I hope everybody out there has enjoyed. Get out there and look at the website. Check out the YouTube. And like Pat said, try those spaghetti with mussels. You won't regret it. So from all of us at the Italian American Podcast, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
You're born in Italy. You're freestyling now, huh? And your life will be great. See that you're born in Italy.